Welcome to another episode of Civic Cypher. I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
The name is Ward Quentin J. But my friends call me Q.
Yes, indeed. And of course, we are back to talk more about the goings on in the world of melanated peoples in this country. And we got a lot to talk about, unfortunately. But before we get to recent videos, before we get to processing, you know, what's happening in the world of political activism and so forth, you know, we had some comments via our Instagram page, and I thought it was worth, you know, us talking about them. For those that don't already, please follow our Instagram and our Facebook. Just search Civic Cypher and keep up with us during the week, and of course interact with us, because we need to know your thoughts. This is all of our show. We're just the ones giving a voice to it, but the hope, of course, is that it will benefit not only us and our future, but you as well. And it doesn't matter what color you are or what your faith is or any of that sort of stuff. We're all trying to create a better world for each other. But I digress. One such thing that came up this week is someone wanted to know where the outrage is when the police take aggressive action or otherwise shoot slash kill someone who's white in the same manner that they do black folks. Wanted to know, well, where's the reaction? Where are the people at? Why is it that no one's coming to the defense of someone just because he's white and he's subject to the same system? And I thought that was a fair question, because obviously we don't want the show to constantly frame our position as though we are the only ones underneath the foot of a corrupt criminal justice system. Although we do acknowledge that oftentimes we're the ones who get the worst of it. So again, I thought that it was important to address that question and, you know, provide some, at least from where we sit, some context for how that looks and how that feels relative to seeing it happen to a black person, and, you know, provide some context. And so I'll go first. I would love to hear your thoughts on it. So obviously there's a long storied relationship with the police and black people in this country. You know, policing was literally born out of, or rather patrolling was literally born out of, slave patrols in this country. And so it's almost a symbiotic relationship, unfortunately, that police need black bodies. And I know that's a weird way of looking at it, but you can make an argument if you so chose. But I believe that the result of, you know, politicians peddling fear for decades has resulted in a policing culture that has created an army of bullies, an army of people who have unlimited fiscal resources, zero accountability, and oftentimes are able to vent their frustrations in the line of duty. I read a statistic many times, so I don't know, because I didn't conduct the research myself, but I've come across a statistic that I believe would be, I believe it to be true. So again, take this with a grain of salt. I don't want to misrepresent any police officers or anything like that. I want to have fair conversations, but my understanding is that there is an unusually large amount of police officers who are also wife beaters. You know, these are people who abuse their wives at home, which to me suggests that these violent, aggressive behaviors are kind of part and parcel with the gig. Or otherwise, people that are prone to those violent outbursts tend to find themselves in that line of work. They seek out that line of work, right? And so if that's true, and I believe it to be true, so I'm going to continue. If that's true, then what you end up with is, again, an army of violent, overly violent folks, mostly, who, I mean, and I understand some folks want to do good. They want to be the good guys. They want to be the heroes and so forth. But, you know, if these statistics are any indication of who the people are that actually man the lines, you have violent people, again, with who are able to operate with impunity, who have a culture of protecting themselves and, you know, burying their sins, and are able to kind of get their aggression out when they work. They just jump people all the time. You know, if you show up somewhere and you got three of your guys with you, you know, you're going to be able to do whatever it is that you want. Someone's talking back to you and you don't like it, instead of, you know, arguing your way through it, or just kind of understanding that you're a public servant and sometimes the public is not as nice. Now you have three or four of your guys with you. You're able to kind of get off a couple punches and kicks and stop resisting to people that aren't resisting, and so forth. And we know that to be true. That's standard procedure. You're on the ground with four people on you, and then they yell, "Stop resisting," when you literally can't move.
Stop trying to stop yourself from being harmed.
Right.
Stop it.
And so how does this relate to the how people deal with, you know, black bodies versus white bodies, right? My thoughts are that because we have such a long standing beef, if you will, with police and policing and how it's been done, we are, as a people, just more tired of it. We as a people have more resources dedicated to it. We as a people understand that the numbers overwhelmingly favor black and brown bodies being abused by police relative to white folks. And I think that once we take a step back from that, we can all agree that policing as an institution and as a culture is predatory. It's overfunded. There's no accountability, as I stated, and it's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It was designed to address unfounded fears in the general population. And if these fears don't really exist, and you have a bunch of bullies with unlimited resources and impunity, then you end up with folks who might abuse a white guy or two here and there. And another part of this is that a lot of times, I think the statistic is that something like 60% of police officers are white men. Something like that. It's a huge number. And there's a smaller percentage that are female, white women. And I think white women are 10%, something like that. And then the other 25% of police are others, including black officers. Again, I believe that to be true. I don't have the stats in front of me, but if that's not accurate, it's somewhere around that number. And so for us, a lot of times, the police, like if you close your eyes and imagine a police officer, the platonic ideal police officer, what the image that pops in your head is a white man, you know, I would guess, right? You're nodding your head, but.
White man with the hat, the shirt, the badge, and the gun.
The little mustache, you know.
Maybe or maybe not, depends on, sure, if he's younger, old, yeah, fresh out of the academy, there's no facial hair. And he's the most eager to show how
down he is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's worked his whole life. But I do want to say this, that any unjust harm on any human being is at least for us, something that we wouldn't stand for. You know, we don't want to see anybody get hurt. We certainly don't want to see anybody lose their life at the hands of the police. And because it's less common in those, with respect to white males, which is what the question is about, it doesn't happen with any regularity. And oftentimes, I believe the thing that really makes all the difference is that I still feel like that white man who's being abused and taken advantage of by the police, if he or his father or his family or whatever wanted to seek justice, that they would at least be heard, they would have their day to plead their case, and they would be given a fair trial, you know? And if you swap that out with a black person, I think that our expectation has, for the most part, been, I think you mentioned a couple weeks ago that out of 15,000 police shootings of black men in this country, two of them resulted in actual convictions.
Seven in 15,000.
That was the number. Okay. So, but that shows how there needs to be some change with respect to police officers and black men. I think that our assumption is often, or maybe it's not an assumption, because I don't think our thoughts even go there. At least mine don't. But I think that the understanding is that black folks do not get a fair shot at justice if the police mismanage whatever the case, and they abuse their power. And so those are my thoughts on why there's a different reaction when the victim is black versus when the victim is white.
There's a lot with regards to this topic and the question that's being posed. So let's start with the very, very easy and explainable numbers.
Okay.
A black man is 150% more likely to be killed by police in his lifetime than any other person in the United States. And this data is from the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America, not the Black Panther Party. Just so we're clear that we're not inventing this data or skewing it in favor of the argument being made that we're...
I see those stats in front of me.
That we're far more likely to be killed by police. So that's the first reason why there's not as much outrage, because it's 150% more likely to happen to us. Another issue that some might argue, I won't, but some might, is that white men being killed by police are not being killed because they're white. And I think there is irrefutable evidence that in a lot of these cases, black men are being killed because their skin is the crime. Being black is what they're guilty of. It's why they were pulled over in the first place. They didn't just break the law. They were not brandishing a weapon. Sometimes they're sitting in their own homes, and officers get to enter their homes and kill them and still not go to prison for the rest of their lives. There's a bit of Stockholm syndrome with regards to non-black, specifically white people in this country that are poor, that are victims of injustice, that are not treated fairly. That's not because they're white, which I bring up again because that's very, very important. But the system in place has done a remarkable job of marketing itself to most of the people that it oppresses. Because we are still, 14-15% of the population? And that would be me being generous.
Yeah.
There's a very large group of white Americans that live below, at, or very close to the poverty line, that vote and carry out the civil duties of completely different people than who they are.
The only thing they have in common is their lack of melanin.
Exactly. So when you can convince more than half of the population who you oppress, who you try to keep uneducated and poor, so that the richest and most successful of you can continue to thrive, when you've convinced them that we're all on the same team and they will fight to uphold your best interest, then you won't have those same people taking to the streets in protest of the rights and privileges and liberties that they're not being afforded.
I think that's why there's such a huge amount of folks that shout things like Blue Lives Matter.
Or All Lives Matter.
Or that. You know, I saw, this is funny, because this happened, my hand to God, this happened today. I was driving and I saw what looked like a beat up old police car. It was weird because normally police cars, they keep them pretty nice, pretty new. They got a, you know. But it was a two-door GMC Jimmy with the yellow lights on the top of the car. Not a red and a blue one, but they were yellow. But it had like a sticker around the car. The car had been in an accident, so the front of it was kind of crumpled into the passenger compartment. The stickers didn't go together, but they were blue, like someone had, almost like someone painted onto a police car, but they put the stickers on it, and the stickers were crooked, the letters were crooked, but it said neighborhood patrolmen, something like that. And then there were two guys in this truck. This truck was hood, son. And there was two guys in the truck, and one of them had the American flag as a COVID mask on his face. And the other one had that flag with the blue line, which is an abomination and an affront to the actual American flag. And so was the other one, by the way. If you know anything about flag code, you're not supposed to wear the flag on anything, and you're not supposed to change the colors of the flag. So anybody that talks about disrespecting the flag needs to read the actual flag code and don't come at me about anything about the flag.
Except those people don't care.
So
about,
so let me finish.
Respecting the flag.
So these people, who are clearly not officers, were, for all intents and purposes, impersonating officers. Clearly, these guys have none of the massive police budget, because that car, it looked like it had been in an accident.
Yeah, I'm sure. And it was from the training as well.
And dig this. Those GMC Jimmys, they stopped making those in the 90s. So that car is so old, you know? It's leaning on the everlasting arms, man. I don't know how that thing is still moving. But, and these guys are just in there, windows down. That means no AC. And if you don't know, we live in Arizona, and it is warm outside right now. So these guys are just out cruising around trying to fight crime alongside the cops, I guess. That they really dressed that vehicle up to look like it was a police car. This wasn't a private security company. This was two dudes in their car. So you're absolutely right. This system has marketed itself to people who, in my estimation, those guys had no money. And really, perhaps they didn't really have anything exciting to live for other than America. America, you know. And that's something that really surprises me, is that a lot of times people's whole identity is being American, which sometimes is a stand-in for being white in America.
Yeah,
because you don't often see other folks take that same approach.
The colloquialism that you just used, America,
yeah,
positions itself as an adversary to black people, flagrantly.
Yeah.
So again, you have an entire group of people that votes and performs several civic duties,
perhaps,
in direct conflict of their own best interest, because at least they're not black.
Isn't that weird? And you know, who's that politician?
And work you with would be better off if not for these people. You, poor white sir, would be better off if not for all of the Mexicans that snuck into the country and stole your jobs.
How about that?
If not for all the criminal black people who are driving through a neighborhood they don't belong in, because they're black. So you talk about those fears that shouldn't exist, but they do. Because those seeds, completely unfounded, but yeah. those seeds have been as deeply planted as possible.
Sure.
And take it to our cinema and our pop culture. You know, the movies that we love that gross very high, that take you on a tour of our neighborhoods, show us as murderous gangster thugs.
Not to mention our own music. But that brings me to the next thing I want to talk about. Music. So.
Music.
The music.
The music.
So listen, if you're listening to our voices, you're listening to a radio station that plays black music. You may or may not know the name I'm about to mention, but there's a rapper from Chicago. His name is G Herbo. Pretty good. And I caught a clip of him sitting down with Charlemagne, and he was talking. And he tells a bit of a story. I'll try to be brief, but the way the story goes is he says, you know, when I was 16, 17, growing up in Chicago, there were people who wanted to kill me because of who my older brother was. They could hurt my older brother if they could kill me. And I knew that because I would see him and then I'd be able to get away from him or whatever. And this is the result of living in these environments, which we've talked about how these environments developed. This is not like, if you go to Africa, it's not like that. Black yeah. people don't just
it was not,
develop ghettos.
It was not this natural selection.
Yeah, this is government intervention and the strategic deployment of drugs to disrupt black and brown communities. This is all researchable.
I'm drugs, not making that part. Guns, poverty,
all the above,
etc.
So you end up with these environments, we'll call them ghettos, you know. G Herbo is from one such place in Chicago, and he's telling a story about how he has to go to school and come home. And he says, you know, in his interview, he's like, you know, I love my mom. I'm not a horrible person. Why would I ever want to hurt anybody? You know, he's just like, I'm a normal human being. I'm the normal creature on the planet, same as any other creature on the planet. I'm not here to just, you know, why would I do that? But yeah, carried a gun for a good part of my life because I knew that there were people that could hurt me. It's just a function of the culture and the environment, you know, that you live in when there's a lot in the way of scarcity and, you know, folks are fighting over limited resources and so forth and so on. The story writes itself, and other countries across the world of all peoples of all colors. But his story is, you know, like I said, so he says, yeah, I had to carry a gun with me to school every day. And, you know, what happens if the police pull up and they harass you? They don't want to hear none of that stuff, because as soon as they find out that you have a gun, that's the end of your life. But at least if you have a gun, like, you know for a fact you got to go to school that day. You don't know if you're going to run into the police, right? So he's telling this story and you realize that it's just a trap, which is so funny because a lot of the music that we enjoy in hip hop, we call it trap music, you know, especially if you like really like real trap music. But you begin to see how the music doesn't just glorify these sorts of things for the sake of glorifying it. It's an accurate reflection of society. Now, I'll grant that, you know, there's a degree of, you know, machismo and, you know, I want to get all the girls, I want all the money, that sort of stuff, which is common for any young man in any culture around the world.
But, and in any industry.
Sure, sure. But hip hop just kind of gets a bad rap. And I think that's also because in this country especially, we're taught to be afraid of black people. Now, with that said, hopefully that does answer that question and, you know, address at least a little bit about the hip hop. But fortunately, so far on the show, we were able to discuss a question that came to us via our social media at Civic Cypher, if you're on Instagram, where a person asked, where's the outrage when you know, police abuse white victims. And so we're able to talk about that. We spent a little bit of time talking about, you know, hip hop and what it's like to just grow up in an impoverished community.
And I want to say something before we move on.
Sure.
I don't even know how I forgot to say this already. Where's the outrage? We've been screaming defund the police for a little bit now, except almost 100% of the pushback, and let me just take that down to 80 so I can be generous, comes from the subjects of that question. Where's all the outrage when all of these awful things happen to people that aren't black? The cry has never been defund police in black neighborhoods.
Yeah, we're trying to change the whole system.
It's very clear that the entire infrastructure is rotten.
Yeah, everyone benefits from that. So
the injustice that we're looking to snuff out would benefit all victims of that injustice, not just black people.
I like that. So, during the week, during the past week, we were able to share some content on social media, some videos, and you listening to our voices may have seen some of the videos. You may not have seen them. A lot of these videos come from Sean King because a lot of the high profile videos make their way to his page. So if you like, check out Sean King. You can just Google this guy. D.L. Hughley is another one that we both follow. And, you know, a lot of folks will send videos to them. Sometimes folks will send videos to us, even though we're not on that level with millions of followers. But I implore you to, you know, go back and research these videos if you can't find them on our page, because sometimes they get deleted. They might still be hosted on those pages. But there's something that I really wanted to talk about. There was a video that I saw, and y'all know I be crying all the time. It's just, it comes with the job.
He's emotional like Carl Thomas,
you know, but it's because, I mean, if you imagine having to see what Q and I have to see every week. And we shared this before. We take turns watching the videos so that we don't get overwhelmed with it. You know, there's so much discussion about mental health and making sure that we're pacing ourselves and, you know, not allowing ourselves to become overwhelmed with death and with violence. You know, I'm a happy person. I love love. I love happiness. I love being happy. And it just so happens to be the case that we found ourselves in this position where we have to deal with these things. We have to watch these incidents. We have to feel them, the full weight of them, so that we can provide context to rally the troops, in a manner of speaking, to decide what's the right path forward, to call on the right folks to come and give them a platform so that they can share their expertise with us, because neither of us are professional civil rights activists, but I guess we kind of
are. Maybe we weren't.
Yeah, I guess we kind of are.
We absolutely
now.
Are now.
So this is, but I've been very honest that I'm learning my way through this. I'm not any bigger or any smaller than anyone else. I'm just a human being with a feeling beating heart, and so it's that person that watches these videos and feels
emotional. And in that way, I think we all are professionals at civil rights.
Sure. Okay.
Right. All of us that have any sense of empathy, any sense of love, any sense of wanting things to be okay for everybody. It doesn't require, you know, a doctrine of any sort. You know, just have a beating heart and just be a human being. You know, you should want for things to at minimum be okay.
That's
for everybody.
That's, I'm glad you said that. That's why this first video that caused me to be so emotional is worth discussing. Now, for those that haven't seen it, I'll kind of paint the picture a little bit. There's a woman, elderly. She's probably knocking on 70 years old, gray hair, black, brown-skinned woman. For those that don't know, I'm sure most of you do know, but for those who don't know, that's a very precious creature around here. culturally for us an old black woman. And think about that when I say that. That is the kindest person. That is the person that will share with you. That person calls you baby because that person calls everyone baby. And you don't call someone baby unless you intend to treat them like they are your baby. They're your child. You know what I mean? Like if I got to heaven at the end of my life and God looked me in the face and I saw God and God was an old black woman, I'd be like, yep, checks out.
That's what I thought.
So it's this woman who is driving down the highway. She's in a SUV, high up SUV. I want to say it was like a Toyota Sequoia, if you're familiar with vehicles, but not a mid-size, a full size. Think of Expedition or a Navigator, something that size, big truck. And where the video picks up is the police go to the door of the vehicle. She's already pulled off on the side of the highway.
Do we know why? Why she's pulled over?
I'll get there. And they yank her out of the car. Now you can see that hair. That hair turns white, you know? And you can see she's got like big mama energy. Grandmama energy. I hope that I'm painting the picture for you. I realize that a lot of people that listen to our voices and listen to the show every week might not know or be able to make a connection with that big mama energy or that grandmama energy. But I hope that you kind of know what I'm saying. This is what you get from this woman the whole time. Yank her out of the car and throw her on the ground. Right? That's policing. Police are doing exactly what they're supposed to do in this video. That system works great.
Doesn't benefit us. What they were trained and taught to do.
They were doing exact because at any point in time, you could say, well, why did you handcuff this woman? She clearly poses zero threat to all of these younger men around her. She's alone. She has no purse. Her purse is in the car. They're asking her to get her purse. She's handcuffed. And she's complaining and crying because she says that she got in a car crash and her shoulder, she messed up her shoulder. She says, I was on the way to the funeral. Why did you pull me over? I've done nothing wrong. And they say, we've been following you for 10 miles with the lights on. You didn't pull over. And she's like, I didn't know you were following me. Why would I think you were following me? I didn't do anything wrong. You know, but there's this violent reaction by the police. And yeah. Again, when there's a bunch of them together, they get real bold. I mean, you know,
how dare you not comply is the energy they have once they get to her.
Dig this. It's like gangsters, right? So I'm from Compton, okay? But you know this too. I'm sure everybody knows this story. Even if you're listening and you didn't grow up around a bunch of gangbangers, you know this story. When it's one person, they don't really talk that loud. They might try to get something off, you know, if you're confronting this one person, you know, they size you up, but they recognize where they are in the space that they hold. But when that one person is backed by 3-4 other people, you'll notice that person gets a lot louder, right? And they're a lot more aggressive and they have a lot more to say and they're moving around a little bit.
A lot more emboldened.
There you go. And this is what you see with the police. They're all standing around this elderly woman who's on the side of the road just wailing, and you don't see any empathy. You don't see public servants. What you see is a bunch of bullies. And that's why I speak so much to the culture of policing, because I think that they believe in theory what they did is the right thing. They was it a speeding by whatever it was, I think it was speeding. They said she was speeding. Couldn't have been crazy speeding because she's a million years old.
She's going 56 and a 50 more than likely.
You know what I mean? But when she gets pulled over, you know, these guys all got to show up and show out. And to see that happening and to know that it would not happen if this was any other type of person. Ma'am, what seems to be the problem? Why did you have us follow you for so long? This was, the video had to have been from the South because I do remember that accent. So I apologize. I couldn't get the information of the state or whatever. But these guys were talking like those good old country boys. If this had been an older white woman or older white man or something, I just can't see them behaving the same way. You know, especially once you've determined there is no threat. Now, every single police officer in the world would say standard practice, or they would say it's for our protection, or they would say anything that is their standard argument when it comes to that sort of stuff. But I think that the video that I saw speaks more to the culture of policing. And you mentioned defunding the police earlier, and I'm going to keep talking about it until it happens, because that's what I do. I talk, and usually things happen. So here's hoping. But that further illustrates that defund call, because one of the ideas when it comes to defunding the police is, well, traffic enforcement should not fall under policing. Traffic enforcement is not, you're not dealing with criminals, but what you have are officers who show up with murder weapons and treat people like they're criminals, as opposed to people who may have touched the what's that lane called? The noise lane? I'm referring to, for those that don't know, I'm referring to a story that Q and I have told a couple times on the show, where we were in a car together and we ended up getting pulled over in Mississippi because we drifted for about a second or less.
Well, here's the thing, we didn't drift. The rumble strips, some people call them, but it's just perforated concrete that vibrates when you drive a tire over it. It's to say to a person, hey, if you've dozed off, wake up, or if you've drifted out of your lane, get back in it.
Yeah.
Except in Mississippi, that's not on the side of the road, it's in the middle.
Yeah.
So
it's on the white line, not outside of the white line like it is where we live in Arizona.
Yeah.
So what we ended up with on that night, in brief, just to tell the story, is we ended up stuck on the side of the road for 45 minutes while these people called search dogs to check our car for drugs for a traffic violation. Of course, we had no drugs. We're driving a brand new Porsche, you know. And we're two younger presenting black males, and so they have all the license in the world to do whatever it is that they want because they're boarding on the side of the road. And so again, one of the calls is to have traffic enforcement be its separate arm of policing, where you don't need weapons, you know, you just enforce traffic rules, right? But the latitude that these murderous police have with their murder weapons, when it comes to stopping someone for a traffic violation, is it's just, they can do whatever they want, and then they have it, what's that, qualified immunity?
And it's set up for them to escalate as well, right?
Yeah.
Because they pull you over for speeding. Just write me a ticket for speeding and then give it to me.
That's it.
And then leave.
But they
except have. I want to make sure you're not a criminal.
Do you have any drugs in the car? Do you have it? You mind stepping out of the car? How about you put your hands on vehicles for my protection? Okay. If you don't want to consent to a search, what we're going to do is get a dog out here. And if for some reason they want, my belief is that I've seen police abuse this power when I was very young. You know,
it together. You don't even have to use your imagination from that long.
Oh, okay.
Ago.
No, I was talking about when I was young, but yeah, I've seen it absolutely since then. It's happened to me since then. But I, you know, anyway, and they'll make a criminal out of you if they so choose. You know, obviously, if they have a modicum of something to go on, then it makes their job a lot easier to make a criminal out of you. But if they choose to make a criminal out of you, they'll just say you're resisting arrest. They'll just say whatever and make up stuff.
Which couldn't have happened unless you've already tried to detain me. So how is resisting arrest the charge, sir?
Listen, I don't know. But it happens. We both know that it happens. It's happened in my family. It's happened to me.
What was I being arrested for?
So, again, with this call for defunding the police, I just want to make sure that part of the strategy is to separate. You know, there's a common complaint among police officers. You know, we do too much. How are we supposed to do all of these things? How are we supposed to, you know, if we're responding to every single type of call, from ladies that help need their cat get out of a tree to, you know, someone's actively robbing a bank and, you know, there's an active shooter in the mall and that sort of stuff, you know, those are two different things, but the same person shows up. It's, you know, and these people don't engage. They don't take this job to get cats out of trees. you know, I don't think, but there could be a department that.
Have you ever seen a SWAT team
that looks
training
like
video? You should have to be good enough to be on a SWAT team to carry the murder weapon that you spoke about.
I like that. That works for me.
Right? So everyone that carries a gun should be SWAT. And SWAT should be called when there's imminent danger. Hey, there's someone here trying to kill people. Or like you said, robbing a bank. Or they're beating someone up really bad. Can the people who stop criminals come?
Yeah.
Traffic and wellness checks,
mental health,
and mental health things should be someone like a psychiatrist or psychologist.
And at best, if you wanted to make an argument that they need protection, there are non-lethal options which
absolutely.
They absolutely could abuse. So we don't want that either.
Yeah, but when you abuse the non-lethal option,
people still,
I'm not dead.
Right.
And
if there's
here's
cash,
this.
If there's cameras, and
here's this: if I'm not dead, you might be held accountable.
Boom. Talk to him, Q. Say that, Q.
Because we cannot pretend that some of these deaths don't happen for that exact reason. So only one person has a side of the story to tell.
So now we're starting to see that defund the police is not so scary even though it sounds scary. It's really more a call to reallocate these resources, these fiscal resources. Let's create departments that prevent crime from happening in the first place, that deal with social inequities and so forth. But also, let's really rethink what policing means, because a commuter, and the example that I was given earlier in the show about the white man who lost his life because the police were trigger happy, that was a function of a traffic stop. Man did nothing wrong. He was a little bit argumentative with the police because he didn't feel like he should have been pulled over and detained, and that's his right. You know, just because the police are talking to you doesn't mean that you should have to sacrifice your dignity. Black folks often do because we want to live, but
you know,
I understand
often about it. It's the idea.
You and I always
home.
Do it. Yeah,
always
100% of the time. Yeah, but I do understand that. You know, questioning an officer, and an officer doesn't want to give you an answer, you double down on the question. Like, wait a minute, you got to tell me why I'm here. Otherwise, I don't know if this is bogus or fugazi or what.
Imagine the people you pay to protect you.
I don't have to imagine this.
Bullying you.
Really don't have to imagine that.
No, I'm saying imagine it, because in that position, we can't view it that way.
Of course not. Yeah,
we can't be thinking this person that I pay to protect me is out of line and stand your ground. And no, but for those who have greater imaginations than myself and have never had the displeasure of the type of interactions with law enforcement that we have, imagine the people that you literally pay to protect you harassing, beating,
killing,
and killing you, and being upset with you for being upset with them.
And then there
being
no accountability.
You.
Course. So yeah, this is the world that we live in, but we're talking about it, and I think that gives power to this conversation, to this narrative, and to the thrust of this campaign. Speaking of wellness checks, and you know, we talked about there being different types of calls, like 911 will take a call and send it to fire department,
dispatch,
send
it to
a paramedic, send it to a, you know, police officer. There can be a whole other division. There can be. Donald Trump invented the Space Force. There can be a division of people that respond and do wellness checks or traffic enforcement or whatever.
That actually happened.
It's a real thing. But it shows you that it's possible. These people,
all of us,
I'm going to include myself in there. We've all developed a very narrow view of what policing looks like and what public safety looks like. But if we expand it just a bit, and we recognize that it is possible to expand it just a bit, then we can address some of these things. And one such thing was another video that we saw. You sent me this video, Q. My understanding is that you don't really see much in the video. It's dark, but you do hear the audio. An officer pulls up, gets out, weapon clearly drawn, right? Based on what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing in terms of his arms being outstretched. And the video lasts a minute or less. I believe it was a matter of seconds, so it couldn't have been a minute, but, you know, who knows? Anyway, officer gets out screaming immediately. Put your hands up, put your hands up. You know, and then he says, don't put the gun to your head. And then he's like screaming, like, don't walk toward me, don't walk toward me. And then bang, 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 bang. And then he starts getting on the radio, shots fired, suspect down, blah, 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 this, that, and the third.
Funny how suspect's down.
Something like that. You know, I invite you to watch the video. It's either on Sean King's or D.L. Hughley's
page. I'm just saying that that's the term they use, even if you're not actually suspected of anything.
So tell me what you know about this video and why you sent it to me.
I sent it to you because I couldn't watch another one. I couldn't. That was video six. Thanks you. Video six of the week or something like that. And I didn't even get to the gunshots part. I heard what you heard, how it starts.
Yeah.
And from that tone, I knew the direction that it was going. It was being escalated that way almost with intent.
Yeah, it sounded like that stop resisting stuff.
Yeah. The idea that I'm going to murder you so you don't murder you was ridiculous. Wasn't a gun, by the way, people. But even if that's what you thought it was, why are you murdering the man holding the gun to his own head? To protect you? Or because now that you think you see anything in his hand,
what did he have in his hand? You can
murder him and justify it. This strange technology called the cell phone.
That guy had a cell phone in his hand, and the officer said,
and I guess that's how you can pretend that he has a gun to his head, because he has the phone here. For those of you that can't see me, just imagine holding your phone to your ear. And imagine while holding that phone to your ear, being told by a person with a gun pointed at you and screaming at you to put the gun down. There's a moment where you understand I'm about to die. I know I don't have a gun, and so does this officer most likely. But now that he's said out loud, just like the officer who yelled out taser, after already having pulled out and aim a pistol, now that he's yelling out gun, he's going to give himself some deniability, some cause, and some justification for murdering me. And with the exception of collapsing on the ground, which might be a sudden movement, which might also cause him to shoot me, there's no version of this where I survive. Because this officer determined before he got out of his car
how this was going to play out. Well, that's very sad to know that it was a phone, but I want to say something. I do understand the desire to have someone in that moment with you when the police pull up, because, you know, to add to the story that we told earlier about us being in Mississippi with the lane lines or whatever, first thing I did was put my phone on the dashboard and turn on Facebook Live so that I wouldn't be alone, because once they took you out of the car, they asked you to step out of the vehicle and walk back to the police car. So I'm like, okay, whatever's happening to Q is about to happen to me. So I do get that, and I understand that, and that's just an unfortunate part of how we need to interact with the police. But it's sort of like a catch 22, because we need someone else to witness what we're going through or what we're about to go through, and the police are insistent that we do exactly what they say or else they're terrified and they're going to execute us. And so I guess this is the world that we live in, and it's even sad. But real quick, and if you're just tuning in to Civic Cypher, I'm your host, Ramses Jha.
They call me Q Ward.
Okay, you were going to say something. What was that?
We were speaking about the idea or the need to have someone with us, or hopefully someone around when we interact with law enforcement.
Sure, yeah.
And the really interesting thing that I've noticed over the last year, and I say that period of time very specifically because of the very heightened sense of accountability, and the increase in people scrutinizing and paying attention to law enforcement. Since George Floyd was murdered, there are a lot of people paying attention. And when the most eyes are on them, and camera phones and their own body cams, not only has it not slowed down or ceased, but I'm seeing more of these videos than I ever have at any point in my life. It's almost like, oh, you guys are going to challenge us? Let us show you how we really get down. And they're so used to operating with impunity.
They're so bold about it
that they'll murder you on video
and then say blue lives matter. Were you going to say that already? Man, I could read your thoughts. For those that don't know, we're talking about the video of what's her name? She was 14.
I think her name was Makia.
Yeah.
Makia
Bryant. Yeah. So, yeah, shout out to our producer, DJ Swirl, who was feeding us the info we need. And one more thing I wanted to talk about. There was another video that we saw. You might have sent it to me, or maybe Swirl sent it to me, but it was a video of an officer engaging with what turned out to be a teenager with autism, an autistic teenager.
Yeah, unfortunately, I sent you that too.
And you know, that reminds me of there's so many names. I really need to do better. I'm terrible with names in real life, but there's a young man in Colorado and the police choked him in the cold, and he was a kind man. I need to find his name. I'm going to say his name before the show's over, but story kind of reminds me of his interaction with the police, where the officer shows up, and in the video at least, the officer shows up, asks the kid to sit down or something like that, and the kid reluctantly complies. But you know, as you can imagine, this kid is pretty confused, and you know, the officer's position is the officer does not know that this person is autistic, right? Doesn't know that this person, this teenager's level of comprehension. So the officer has to do what the officer has to do. And again, I think that speaks to the culture of policing. If you're going to be a police officer because you get protected first, then I think that you're coming to the table with a degree of fear that doesn't lend itself to you performing your job the way that it's supposed to be performed. You're supposed to be a public servant. If you come into every situation like, well, I'm scared of what might happen to me, then you're going to end up causing more harm to society than good.
What if that's why you signed up?
And so this is why we need to restructure it. You know, and while I got it, his name is Elijah McClain. It's the young man from Colorado who lost his life because the police choked him in the cold last year. And I don't know if it was autism, but there was something about him, something like that, where he wasn't. He was a very special young man. That's the best way I could describe him. Anyway, so this teenager from last week, again, had a similar interaction with the police where the officer said something, scared the kid. The kid gets up to try to run away, which again is a natural human impulse. If you fear for your life, I don't care if it's a lion, I don't care if it's a police officer, I don't care if it's a bug. I've seen human beings run away from bugs. You understand? So a police officer with a murder weapon will scare you enough to run away. It's the only thing that you know how to do. You either fight or you flight. It's an innate thing that's built into us. If you get someone scared enough, their heart starts pumping adrenaline and they need to figure out how to survive. It's limbic. You cannot change that. It is built into every single creature that is endowed with consciousness, self-preservation. And so this child responded accordingly and tries to run away. The officer catches him and then starts punching him. And when you recognize that this is an adult police officer punching a teenager with autism in the face, you have on full display in front of the whole world the culture of policing. And I already know what the officer would say. Say something about suspect was non-compliant, suspect was resisting,
suspect fit the description. I feared
for my life. I need, you know, all these sorts of things. And then you end up with another police officer admitting to his own cowardice, but the result is still the same, that he's not held accountable, there's no charges filed, and this child is beaten and forever, you know, changed as a result of that. I heard a story the other day about someone who went through a similar interaction with the police, and he says, you know, I've never called the police in my life. Never called the police in my life. I've needed the police. I've needed some sort of service, but I know the last time I interacted with the police that they... It's like a phobia. Okay, I'll tell you something real quick that I understand. I'll tell you something.
Phobia is not even accurate when it's justified.
But yeah, thank you. But I'm gonna tell you something. So, I live in America, right? People love dogs. Everybody loves dogs. You know who does not love dogs? Ramses.
Ramses
does not love dogs.
Does not love dogs.
Nope. Not even a little bit. I have grown.
Even if they belong to me.
Nope.
Or his sister.
Nope. But I've grown to tolerate dogs, right? But that's because I worked really hard at it. The reason that Ramses doesn't love dogs is not because I wish harm on dogs, because I think the dogs are terrible creatures or whatever. I got bit by a dog when I was 3 years old. I had a three-year-old arm, baby-sized arm. Dog bit into my arm. I have a tattoo of a heart over the scar. Sunk his teeth into my arm and then took his tooth out of my arm, and I saw a deep purple socket on my arm from a dog that I knew that I was petting at the time. Wasn't petting it hard. I'm not that person. I don't have that energy. I was just hanging out with the dog. Bit my arm, plugged a deep purple socket into my baby fat arm, you know, nice and squishy arm, man. And I looked at it and I thought, man, that's pretty cold. That's foul. So then I started wailing. My dad comes out, makes a big scene out of it, takes me and gets me all bandaged up. The rest is history. For the next 11 years until I was 14, I was absolutely terrified of every dog. I could be around cats. I could be around mountain lions. It wouldn't make a difference, you know. But if you had a dog, it could be a chihuahua. It could be the smallest. It could be a baby. I didn't want nothing to do with it because it was just now a part of me.
Yeah, at that point, right? It's innate.
Right. And I just, and it was embarrassing and it was all these sort of things. So I understood when this man was telling me a story about the police, you know, traumatizing him in that way. And so I can relate. And maybe you got a story or two you can relate to as well. But that's all the time that we have for Civic Cypher this week. Once again, I'm your host, Ramses Ja.
They call me Q Ward, and that just so happens to be my name.
Yes, indeed. Please hit the website, civiccypher.com, for all your questions. Submit any topics you want us to discuss. Of course, you can donate. Your donations are appreciated and help the show grow. And again, be sure to follow all our social media at Civic Cypher. And until next week, y'all, peace.
Peace.